Welcome to this evening's Compassion Dialogue. And this Compassion Dialogue this evening is with Dr. Michelle Asantewa. I hope I've pronounced it properly, have I?
Asantewa, that's great.
Well, that's amazing. Anyway, welcome, Michelle. Thank you for being
with
us.
Thank you.
Before properly introducing you, a few words about this series of dialogues. It's hosted by the Spiritual Companions Trust, which is a UK educational charity. And we develop resources for people who are spiritual, but not necessarily religious. In all these dialogues, our purpose is to explore what influences, motivates, and inspires influential spiritual authors, teachers, and activists, and hopefully inspire you. Two. More love, more compassion, more consciousness. Coming up in a few weeks, I'll be talking with Caitlin Matthews, one of the great pioneers in resurrecting Celtic and goddess spirituality, and author of over 80 books, which puts Michelle and me to shame. We'll maybe just be impressed by Caitlin Matthews' 80 books, including Diary of a Soul Doctor, Sophia, Goddess of Wisdom, Bride of God, and the Celtic Book of the Dead. And now to Michelle. Originally from Guyana, Michelle is, I'm sorry, I've got a croak in my throat. Michelle is originally from Guyana and is an inspiring author, academic, poet, and activist. Her work and life purpose are deeply entwined with traditional African spirituality and its practices. And her many publications include Guinea's Komfa, the ritual art of trance. So, welcome, Michelle. Thank you very much for giving us your time today. I'm very grateful on behalf of all of us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really glad to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
Great. So listen, the way we always start, and this is probably deeply relevant actually to what we're going to talk about, is where were you born? What kind of family did you come from? What were they into? And knowing that later on you're exploring trance and African spirituality, was any of that indicated privately to you when you were a child, or did it come later? But tell us first of all about Guyana and your family and where you guys were from.
Right. So, yeah, I was born in Guyana, and the ancestral family come from a part in Guyana called Berbice. And Berbice was one of, you know, many counties, if you like, or regions in Guyana. And my grandmother was quite spiritual, but I wouldn't have known that then. What I know was that I was quite close to my grandparents. So my grandmother was quite spiritual, but my grandfather was very much like a cultural icon in the village, but also then to a certain section of people, cultural activists, if you like. He was kind of an icon. He taught them lots of different things about African traditions. I don't know how he knew them. I never got to ever speak to him about that, but I was close to both my grandparents. This is on my mother's side. I didn't know my grandparents on my father's side. And so I never really knew them to be church goers, but I knew they went to church because I didn't necessarily live with them. And I start with my grandparents because this very much feels like an ancestral thing. They weren't really church goers. I didn't live with them. I actually lived in another area called Linden, which is a small mining town. And I lived there because my mother migrated to England when I was about 2 and a half, and she left there myself and my brother and my sister, and that family, she left me with her twin sister, and that family were Also was my mum. They were Christians, specifically Seventh-day Adventist, which meant Sabbath from Friday night into Saturday evening, which meant no playing, no nothing. It was I found it really, I didn't like it at all. And at I just used to try and escape and go to another auntie who lived nearby, and she wasn't like Seventh-day Adventist, so I used to try and go there on Friday, and then I'd end up staying over and not having to go to church. I didn't actually mind going to church. We went to church on Saturdays. I didn't mind going when I went, but at the same time, I just had this quirky feeling about churches, at that young age even. And then at 10, I came here.
But listen to me, I'm curious. Your grandfather, who was the icon in the village, was and who was teaching about African roots. Did he know where his ancestry came from in Africa? And how did he view the Seventh-day Adventist church stuff?
Oh no, so my so so that my grandfather, that's the thing. My understanding is that they were Lutherans. But my auntie, when she married from the village, and then her husband took her to Linden. And she had one of these prearranged marriages. And she was taken to Linden, and then somewhere along the line she became a Seventh-day Adventist. I don't know how or why, but she became a Seventh-day Adventist. But my grandfather, he was a Lutheran, but he knew what the African customs, and I just think maybe it's ancestral memory, maybe it was the proximity of him to my great grandparents, whom I didn't know as well. But I have no idea how he knew those things that he could tell some of these cultural seekers. And they used to come from the town to come into the village to seek him out. And so I never knew, because I'm like one of the babies in the generations. I'm like the last but one in that late line. So I, you know, he died. He died in 1978, and I would have been about eight at the time, but I just remember some of him. I remember loving him, and I just remember their energy, him and my grandmother's energy.
So sometimes people have a very powerful sense of their grandparents, don't they? And that's there's that sense of grandparents anchoring them into something different from their actual parents who are younger and trying to get on with life, and grandparents have a kind of stable connection with something different.
Well, interestingly, my mum, it's a bit of a saga really, but my mum baptized or christened, I can't even say that word, or offered us up, as she sometimes calls it, into four different denominations. So she's got four children, and my eldest was she took into a Catholic church. The next one went to an Anglican. My brother was Seventh-day Adventist, and I was Pentecostal.
Taking out different insurance policies.
And my mother was actually, she later became a Unity. I don't know if you're aware of Unity. She became a Unity practitioner, member, and that's what I know my mum. But when we came here, she tried to ensure that we still went to these Seventh-day Adventist church, and I was still not liking it. But she tried to get us to still go there, and then also she would take me to the Anglican church, which is not very far from where we live. Church of England. The school was Church of England, and so on. So that was all going on. So the sense that you're speaking about any ideas around spirituality, those were cultural happenings, if you like, spirits and things like that. But it wasn't effectively metaphysical or positively spiritual. It always seemed like it was this negative entity or this negative thing.
So when did you start, I don't know what the right word is, waking up, opening to, remembering?
So I'm now here, I'd say for 15 years. I've come to this country from since 10, and I'm here 15 years. When my mum and my big sister, they used to try to get me to go back to Guyana because I think they thought that I was losing ground, losing my roots. And but I didn't understand why they kept doing that, because in fact, every time I heard them speaking about Guyana, some of the phenomena that they spoke about were quite scary. So they
Like
would talk
what?
about, like, for example, they talk about things like Olhag. Let's just get Olhag would be like a spiritual entity that was negative, that would come and, suck the blood, a bit like vampiric, of children. Or they'd be like, someone was always affected by Obiaism, which an Obiaism, if you for those who are not aware of, is one of our spiritual aspects, which is in the Caribbean particularly. And that's really like, if you it it's you could cast some kind of spell on someone. Or I see it as like the spiritualist doctor. But it was given a it has been and continues to be given a really negative spin. So when they used to talk about it was always like someone what Obia on somebody, so meaning that someone cast a negative spell on someone and did something really terrible to them, and then something bad happened. So I used to hear this over and over again, and I just thought, why would I want to go back to this place where all this negative stuff is happening? And so when I went to university, in I did my undergraduate in Scotland, or I started my undergraduate in Scotland. And then I had like crises of identity, as you might. And I had a dream of my grandfather during these crises. This is the first and only time I've ever dreamt my grandfather. And I saw him taking me on a plane back to Guyana. So in my third year of university, I took a year out, and that's what I did. I went back to Guyana.
Okay, you followed the dream.
I followed the dream. It
It must have been a very powerful dream to
was a
actually.
very powerful, very vivid, very clear. I knew what I had to do. And I must also say, though, that that dream followed a trip that we made, a few friends or a few university friends, all of them were white, to Spain. And we went on this trip to Spain, and I had an interesting encounter with he was a flamenco dancer and a flamenco, is it flamenco or flamenco? I never know. Singer or dancer, singer and dancer actually, but really mostly singer. And his name was Jesus, but we called him Jesus. And he used to sing at this local bar. It was in a place called Neja. And Jesus had, he invited us to go and listen to him singing one day. And we went. And as he was singing, I got quite emotional, and was just crying and crying. And I became a bit of a celebrity, because apparently somewhere along the line, the spirit of the flamenco singer, the gypsy in him, as they call themselves, must have hit some note in me. And so he then had this kind of interest in me. And we kind of try to speak, but it had to be communicated by my friend because he was obviously speaking Spanish, I'm speaking English. But there was a strong communication, a strong connection. Nothing physical like that, just spiritual, I guess. And then I left and returned to Scotland, and then I had the dream of my grandfather. There were some elements of Nerka that reminded me of Guyana, is what I'm trying to say. So that might have prompted the dream as well.
So you went to Guyana and
I went to Guyana, and it was, I think I really felt the energy of my grandfather then. What I wanted to do when I went back to Guyana, I was now what, 24, 5, I don't know. And I wanted to go in the interior. By interior, I mean into the hinterland, rather than in the urban spaces in the towns and where most people who go back to Guyana, they actually, that's what they do. They just go in those urban settings or in the villages. The hinterland is where like the indigenous people live. We call them, they call them Amerindians, but there are different groups of indigenous peoples that live there. And I went there, a couple of these spaces, and really felt the energy of the place. I felt grounded, and I felt connected to this space. I felt my grand, wherever I went, I felt my grandfather was always there, watching over me. I went into spaces and places where my family who lived there never go, never been, and would warn me, don't go there because X, Y, Z. And I never felt unsafe. I always felt like I could step into these spaces. And there was one area where I remember particularly going where I have reimagined it in part of one of my novels. It's in there. It was by this a little clearing where there was some black water. We have a lot of black waters, which is just a sediment. It's not like it's just black water, and it looks like coffee black. And I suppose I had a real connecting moment there, and I wanted to recapture that or keep that, and I put it in this novel. So I had a real grounding experience in when I went back to Guyana. And prior to that, what I didn't say was that I was having really shoddy marks in my university. I was doing English. Switched from doing business studies into doing English with Commonwealth literature. Switched very quickly. And my marks weren't that great, and I never understood why. I just thought, what was I not doing right? And but then when after I came back from Guyana, there was like as if there was like a clarity of self and a sense of self and a groundedness that totally changed. And so the marks I was getting was, it was, I got A's all the time, and I no longer really cared about the marks, to be
So
honest.
let me ask you a question because I'm curious. You went back to Ghana, you're going into
Diana.
Guyana, sorry. You're going into the hinterland, you're having altered states of awareness.
They weren't quite altered at that time. They were, as in the they weren't necessarily altered. They were just heightened, if you know what I mean. There's
Okay. But in those situations, were you feeling that they came from the indigenous tradition of that part of the Americas or from your grandfather's ancestral tradition? Because you're in a very interesting mix there, aren't you?
yes. I feel it's coming from the cosmos more. I
Okay.
don't feel that it related necessarily to the indigenous population or or my own African ancestor. I feel it was is more cos it's more cosmic than that. It was more a connection with, here is the moon, these are the stars. We stayed under the traveling into that interior in one time in a truck. It took us 4 days to get from the equivalent of coming from London to Scotland, because there was a lot of problems on the road. And we had to sleep in the truck, sleep in a hammock, looking up at the stars, looking up at the moon, and you just felt this just deep connection with those elements, those forces.
There is a huge inner smile emerging from me as I hear that, because one of the things I'm personally clear about is that there is a universal cosmic experience. And people quite often project onto folk of color or people from indigenous traditions that their experience is purely localized as opposed to cosmic. And it's so wrong.
I mean, because there will be moments, for example, where you can have that direct ancestral connection, but beyond that, there is, there is the moon, and I've always felt connected to the moon. I used to My menstrual cycles were always linked to the moon, so even without knowing or coming into my spiritual awareness, I was aware that the moon meant something. And so, like, if I'd go out on the road and I was coming in late at night, it was the moon that I looked to for protection. It was the moon that I said, I'm following you, and I know you're following me, and I know you're going to guide me home. And so I was connected to the moon, and there was no one teaching me any of this. So it had to be, to me, it was that cosmic connection that's internal and external at the same time. Why I feel I was able to do that. And even at university in Scotland, it would become what it would be now. It would be like trees and things like that. Feeling a connection with the earth and all of this. So I then I'm trying to like carry on the story.
Yeah, please.
So I then came back to you uni to uni to, and I and I as I said, I my grade started to improve, and that's how I carried on for the next year or so with these improved grades. I was fine. I felt grounded. I felt I knew myself. I didn't have those inferiority complexes that I had previously, and that was to do with how I saw in Scotland. I was the black student in the whole every all of the classes that I went into. They were all white, mostly white. I was part of the African society, which gave me that sense of an African identity. But in the class environment, I was always this anomaly. I was the only one. And at times when I was doing books that were written by Africans, it was always taught by, in fact, up till then, I had never been taught by a black person at all. And I was annoyed with it. I was just like, this feels wrong. And so I had this vexed face all the time. Like, my face was just always like, why? And but at this point, I don't care. I'm just going to write these essays however way I want to write the essays. I don't care about your mark and criteria. I don't care about this. I don't care about this. I'm just, if I'm writing about Caribbean cultural identity, a question that you've asked me from some book, I'm going to do it this way. And I'm going to satisfy myself that I've done it to the best of my ability. And I felt, free for doing that. And I used to get the A's. They never came back. I just got the A's. I was free. And then, like, when it came to my second to last semester at the university, I had this moment where I had what they would call disassociation or dissociation. And I was in this spiral, and it's like I couldn't see, like for the audience, I'm vaguely seeing because my glass was doing this reflective thing. So I haven't got my glass on. So this vague seeing was a little bit like what was going on at a moment in my when I had to I was compelled to write this big essay that would determine the outcome of my degree. And I just it was like a light had been turned off and I couldn't focus and I couldn't do it. And it just spiraled into me having these ideas about committing suicide. That university, which was Stirling University, had a lake around lake in the middle of it. And I was having these notions about throwing myself into that lake. And I never attempted that, by the way. But I did do odd things where I was trying to commit suicide, and to the point where my brother and my sister had to come to the university. I'd been there for like 4, 3.5 years, and none of my family members had ever visited. But because of how I was behaving and my director of studies saying that she did everything she could to try and get me to finish, but nothing was really working. And so I called my brother and my sister, and they came. And then what I remember is me saying to my brother that I feel like I need to be baptized, because all of them had been baptized. My brother and my sister had been baptized, and I felt that there was something wrong and I hadn't been baptized and I needed to be. And my brother, who's actually Rastafarian, took us we went up on this mountain. It's called Damayat. Is it a mountain? It's a hill or a mountain anyway. It's Damayat. And we went up there, which was mirroring a dream that I'd had. My dreams at this time were very vivid. And I remember having this dream and of my brother, of us going up this hill. And that's exactly what we did. My brother took me up this hill and he baptized me in his way. Like, how do I mean? He just said whatever he needed to say. And at that time, I remember some sprinkles of rain came down. And when we went back down, I saw this rainbow. And I said to my brother, I think my brother actually said, let's see if the rainbow's going to come or something like that. And I said, and then the rainbow came. And I said to him, can you just command the rain? Can you command the rainbow to just appear like that? And he was like, yes. So I was like, okay. But bear in mind, I wasn't like, okay. Everything was just heightened. And I was like, it's as if I was like on some kind of medication or something, but I wasn't. I mean, my brother did give me weed, thinking that that would calm me down. He thought, obviously, okay, she needs calmness. I'll just give her weed. That's my brother's answer. Here's some weed, that'll calm me down. And then they left. And I was now left to try and pretend that I was okay, but I wasn't okay. And I came back to London.
Wow. So you had a mental health breakdown, which was also a spiritual awakening.
Yes. I call it on when I reflect on it a lot now, I call it like, what do I call it? A psycho-spiritual experience. Because the Western interpretive model would call it a mental breakdown. That's what they would call it. But traditional indigenous practices and African as well as others would see it as an opening, a signal, or a prompt, or a whatever, an initiation even. And but the thing is that in those indigenous places, especially when the practice has not been tampered with or hampered by Western nurse, there would be somebody there to guide that, a mentor that would guide the initiate into themselves, into that life. But in this situation, I had nobody that could do that, or I had nobody that did that. And so when I came back to London, which I did, meaning I gave up my last time at university. I'm thinking, oh, I need some kind of religious help or whatever. Or people were directing me there, and I went to the church, where they were preaching on me and praying for me and all of this sort of stuff. And at this time, I'm praying to Jesus, or to. But my brother told me to pray to Jah because he's Rasta, which I did, and it did change a little bit. Like I felt a bit more comfortable in that zone. So I think my brother was kind of mentoring me into the Rastafarian tradition. Then there was another friend who was trying to pull me into Islam or Muslim. And then there were the Christian side that I kind of knew. But somewhere along the line, I could hear. In fact, no, I need to backtrack a bit. When I was going through the haze and the blur, I actually created a circle. When I was in the library at my university, I drew this circle, and I put the names of my ancestors in that circle around me, and I put myself in my name in that center, and I put my name their names around it. Those ancestors whose names I didn't know, I just said ancestors on my father's side, da, 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 da. And then it was, and then I released it. I said, "You need to come, and you need to figure out, help me, because I don't know what's going on." And it was then that the heightened, altered state, if you like, came on a bit more. So that when I came back to London, I was still in this zone of heightened, altered state. And my family, of course, didn't understand anything that was going on, and actually thought I was losing it. I'd gone to university, I'd been overstudying, the regular. They thought, or somebody had done what obeah on me. My brother even thought that at one point. This was the narrative. But I could hear my ancestors, my grandfather, the same grandfather, and my grandmother. They were like inside of my head. They were who were speaking through me at times as well. So I was speaking now in a broad, at that time, in a broad Guyanese accent to my family, who are used to me speaking like this. But at that time, I was speaking in, Creole deeply, very erratically. And so they wanted to put me in an institution. And I knew this. So there was like, I kind of, for me, I feel I had this like, there was like a splitting going on, because I had the very lucid part of me where I understood what was going on. And then there was this other side that it's like I was watching this other side, which is why I can tell you what was happening. Or to a degree, because there are some bits I know that I don't remember well, and my best friend at the time could, or my best friend could pick some of it up. And so, yeah, they wanted me to go in an institution. They brought a priest to the house to pray over me. My mum, I remember throwing holy water on me because, someone had done something to me and all this business. But I knew that if I stayed here, they would eventually put me in an institution. That's the side that knew that. And so that side was trying to get money, raise money to get to Guyana, which, to cut the long story, is eventually what I did. And I stayed there for a year before I came back.
And in Guyana, you slowly integrated.
I slowly came back into that self that that you're like, okay, I'm back to myself.
And were you able to look back at all those events and go, thank you, that was a growth experience, even though it was risky? Were you grateful, or were you kind of wobbled by it.
No, I wasn't. Then I wasn't grateful because I didn't know. I still had no mentor. I still had no anchor. I still had this was happening to me. I knew within myself that it was a spiritual experience I was having, but I had nobody to confirm what it was, what I should do next with it. Yeah, there was none of that. I just,
You were on your own.
yeah, I was isolated. But yeah, I felt very much isolated, but still having the conviction that I was not crazy. I knew I wasn't mad. I knew I wasn't mad. I just needed to understand what it was
Yeah.
that had happened. And so in that year I got married. And then
I dread to ask, was that a mistake or a blessing?
it was a mistake. It wasn't a blessing. But I had known this when I went to Guyana the first time. That's when I met my now ex and now deceased husband. And so when I was going back in this time of altered state, I was going back to him. But my family were trying to tell him, no, don't. She's going through this thing. Don't have her. So he was trying to prevent me from coming.
Listen, I'm going to interrupt because of time constraints. I'm going to take us away from that question. I should never have asked about your ex,
Okay.
right? Forgive me, I should never have asked it. And let's bring you
That's
back.
all right. That's
Let's
okay.
bring you back to the UK. So you've had your year, and you go, I know you've integrated. Just you're stable-ish,
Yes, I've
and you.
come back to the UK. And yeah, and I come back and I pretty much just get a job like regularly and and that sort of thing. Eventually that same husband, because he does fit into it still. He comes to London as well. And but I want to finish my degree because I hadn't finished my degree. But I
Listen,
want to finish it.
I'm aware of our time constraints.
Yeah,
So
that's fine. I'm still on the trajectory.
let me traject us forward to your doctorate. What took you into doing the research?
Yeah, the doctorate came out of the same finishing undergraduate because now the story actually has a line. So what
Okay.
happened was I'm now going to do my undergrad. I'm going to finish my undergraduate, but it's going to be looking at what happened. I'm going to try and understand what happened. So it was looking at spiritual themes in novels because I was my main was literature. So I want to see how indigenous spirituality features in his novels. So I look at Beloved by Toni Morrison, and I look at a book called Mile by Erna Brodbe, and I look at one called Tituba by Marie Kondé. So all of these things, these books, I'm seeing portions of myself. And so that undergraduate led to a master's, which was now, okay, those books are written from Jamaican perspective, the US experience, and where was Marie Kondé from? Guadeloupe, I think. And but where is the Guyana version so that I could identify with myself? And so I decided to look at Kamfer, which I had known about. I knew about tr trance experience through the Guyanese element of these same African diasporic practices. And the Guyanese version was called Kamfer, and which involves trance dancing through drum. So I did my master's. That's what I did my master's in because my undergraduate, I got a first in it, and my supervisors recommended I do a master's. And so I did the master's, and then that master's was now, she said, you've practically done a PhD. So you might as well do a PhD. And that's how I came to do the PhD, which was developing on the comfort element. but now I get to write a full novel or a novella, really, looking at the spiritual experience, looking at trance, looking at the ancestors. The ancestors are actually telling the story in this novel. They are the voice. They are narrating the voice, and they put place these sanctions on this family of sisters and one brother who have forgotten their tradition. It's the book of it now is, I call it something buried in the yard. Yeah, something buried in the yard. But yeah, that's how my PhD came into being. My PhD is all of what happened to then.
What was the research? Presumably, you were actually experiencing some of the dances, yes?
Some of the chances.
Yes.
So it is my view that that altered state that I was experiencing, there was trance elements within that. But really the more evident trance experience was when I was doing my PhD and I went to Guyana. Not necessarily at that time to research because we didn't have funds. They didn't have funds to take me, to send me to places to do that on the ground research that would contribute to my PhD. But although there was a moment when there was a video that I wanted to use for my PhD where my cousin had gone into trance, or a few of them had gone into trance at one of my mother's Thanksgiving sessions. My mum had now sort of temporarily returned to Guyana. And I couldn't use that apparently. And so anyway, when I went back to Guyana, which I did because the experience that I had, the earlier undergraduate experience, was to me unfinished in the sense that I could still feel that there was something that was I wasn't finding. There was something that was missing. So I went back to Guyana. And during my time going back to Guyana, I thought, you know what? When I go back, I'm going to go and see a spiritualist. Yes, we call them Obia man or Obia woman, and I'm going to go and see one. And so I went to see one, and it was that moment that, how you know some of the things that he did. That's when I started to experience these trance, moments.
Can you describe them a little bit more fully?
So trance, it's like stepping out of yourself and enacting another in like another being that or that being has come onto you and you are now acting. You can see things, you can there's so many different things you can do. You could see in a different light. You feel like you could heal people. You're kind of in a state of like ecstasy almost, but that's not quite the right word because there is an ecstatic moment and then there's this trance experience. But you're just out of yourself. And you could speak. Sometimes you were speaking. There were times when I would speak in a different language or different languages. And I would be able to tell somebody something about themselves. You know, it's not something you could do, but you can do it at will because there are tools that could get you there, just prayer and what have you. But the bit that I really want to emphasize was that during that time when I went back and having seen the shaman, if you like, I was kind of constantly able to float in and out of these states, and it's like as if it truncates time, so I could see in the past. You know, and I could see in the future and stuff like that. So you could tell Like I would say to my mum, so and so did this. That would have been a past thing. And then this is going to happen and so on. I like my mum was, or my friend at the time, one of my friends came with me. She had a broke, she'd hurt her ankle. And in the state of trance, I helped heal her ankle. Things like that. I was just not, it was just not me doing this. It was another entity, another energy, another force.
What kind of circumstances did you need to be in to go into the trance state? Was there always drumming and dance, or were you
Not
going into
always. No,
open
this is the thing. But the one where you're really like, where you might dance or you would dance is when the drums are playing. And not just dance, you might actually recite or give prophecy or chase some energy away. You're doing a, like a healing in that moment. So it was my, at the same time it was my brother's 40th birthday that time. So we actually had a drumming session for him. And this is when a lot of the trance came on. And those are some of the things I could do. You would dance, you would heal, you could call out, you could see if someone had done something negative, you would be able to point out where it is, even who it was, and all of this. But it didn't always have to be those circumstances.
The reason I ask is because in some traditions, there's a preparatory period, maybe a cleansing, a purification, then a putting on of ritual clothes,
All right.
and then going into the space where special things happen,
Okay.
which allow the person or enable the person to go into an altered
Yes.
state.
So you're right. So in any case, whenever we are going to do one of our, let's say it's a Thanksgiving or one of our sessions, yeah, we would sprinkle, we would use like Florida water, or we would just do cleansing down of the yard, we'd use incense and so on. Bear in mind that I wasn't at the time necessarily thinking that I'm preparing this space for myself to go into trance, because I didn't really know that that level that was happening when the drums were playing could happen. What was happening prior to that was probably similar to when the initial altered state. So I was having those moments when I would switch, and I was it was almost like I was a healer, I'd say, like a medium healer type, that I didn't need any of these gimmicks to go into the trance or to do the healing. But so when we were doing the event for my brother, we were just naturally clean down. My mum had always taught us to naturally clean places and stuff like that. It would be later on that I would now know how to do properly, create what we call in Guyana, we call that the ganda, which is where you have those items that you're talking about. We have all those things in place to make sure that when the spirit comes to take on someone, they have some of those things available and everything is clean and everything, keep out all negative entities. That would come later on.
Okay, so when I'm listening to you, I'm hearing two separate threads here. One of them is there's a kind of social cultural set of circumstances which enable a traditional way of going into trance to happen. And I'm also hearing that you instinctively, just because of who you are, go into altered states and trance, and it doesn't necessarily require the ritual
Yeah.
to go into that space.
Yeah, absolutely. So much later on. So for example, if I'm praying, just generally just praying, no one's there, I could go into a trance state. And recently, it's been you go into a trance state. And the entity or the energy that's come on is coming and can communicate through me to my mum, say. And so it's, so for example, where I said I hadn't, I'd only dreamt my grandfather one time, but I have had trance states where my grandfather has come several times. So my grandfather has come and he has spoken to my mum. She would ask him questions and then he would answer. Questions about herself, questions about the family, questions like specifically, like for example, he came one time and he told us the our spirit animals and our spirit stones. I didn't really say that my family and I, the major part of my family are in total disalignment with my practice. They're all Christian. So it's just myself. And my mum is Christian predominantly, but she understands what's happens with me. So yeah, so there are the two, the different elements. Yes, you can through the beating of the drums. And I say this to people, yes, you can go into trance, say obviously through the beating of the drums and so on. But you can go into trance because that is an intuitive ability that you have.
Okay, so here's a kind of cultural question. I'm not sure how to where to go with it, but I'm kind of sniffing at something, and it's to do with what aspects of what you're describing would you feel are particularly associated with your ancestral or African tradition, or is what you're describing more general?
Okay. Well, I don't know, because I think if you are practicing spirituality, and if you are metaphysical, and if you are not thinking, if you are aware of the multiple dimensions, even though we're existing on this one, then I don't really constrain it to just African per se. It's just that my ancestors, that's where they, the lineage, that's where that's who I'm connected to. And Africans have a strong feature of honoring their ancestors and knowing that there is no separation between the ancestral realm and this realm. We know that we can go and speak to our ancestors for anything. They're like the first thing we call. This is like indigenously. This is not the interruption and the disruption when the Europeans and when Europeans and Arabs, that invasive process. Prior to that, Africans were always communicating and communing with ancestors. But I don't think that that is just an African thing necessarily. When I speak of it as African traditional practices, I do that politically and as an activist, because it's been demonized. And it continues to be demonized. And so I want it to be recognized that this is something that is universal, really. But it's just that the African element or African expression of that universal practice has been demonized because of invasion, of cultural imperialism, which came and said, no, you cannot honor your ancestors. No, you cannot honor this sacred tree or this sacred stone or these sacred images or and so on. So in that same book that I mentioned, Something Buried in the Yard, One of the characters, she's what? Well, one of the characters is married to, or the sister's married to a European. She's married to an Englishman. And when I create this space for them to have a ritual, that Englishman is the one that goes, he goes into trance. And I do that deliberately. And he, you know, he talks about some things when he was little, and he had this connection with his grandfather and stuff like that. And I do that deliberately because I want to see that this is something that happens. It's just that people deny that it's happening. You know?
Yeah, European cultural imperialism has been horribly successful.
Yes, for sure.
Horribly successful, not just in Africa.
No.
I'm thinking of the witch burnings here.
That's the tail of my cat.
Oh, hi.
Sorry.
What's your cat's name?
This is Mocha, but
Mocha.
there are two of them. The other one's
Okay.
called Nunu.
Okay, so are you obviously you have a spiritual metaphysical practice still today. This is very this may you may consider this an intrusive question, so push me back if it is. And your cat wants to join us.
Come. Say hello.
Little white whiskers. Do you regularly take yourself into an altered state nowadays, perhaps through meditation or listening to music or
Not
ceremony? What do you do?
I How do I answer that question? I with some others, we organize an annual ritual to the Orisha Oshun, Mammy Oshun, who is from the Yoruba system. And so we do that every August. And usually when we do the drumming, I if I have set my head, my mind or my spirit on, you know, I'm okay if the trance happens, you know, then I can allow it to be. But I kind of got into this thing of where I choose now and I go, okay, you know, this is now a public, it's quite a lot of people. Unless I have some people there that can, you know, protect me and stuff like that, I don't always kind of go there. But what I suppose I want to emphasize again is that the extent of that cultural imperialism means that if we as Africans were gathered in a room where there is really like strong, really brilliant drumming, if one of us go into a trance state, that is a big thing. But if we were in Guyana, or if we were on the continent, and that drumming was to the extent where it's quite rich, it's quite, you know, real, it's about spiritual, there would be loads of people who would be going into trance state. So I find that here there is like a weight or a invisible shield that makes trance and things like that quite not as regular as it would be in other spaces that we are in numbers. But yeah, I mean, it to me, it's I it's as it's called for. If I really feel that I need to communicate with my grandfather is like a mentor. My grandfather's a spiritual guide, an anchor, and so on. So if I really feel that I'm lost or I need to know something, you know, I would go into that space where I would call him, or I'm mindful about going into the spaces sometimes because someone else someone else comes. It's I'm never afraid of who's going to come. Sometimes people have come, I should say, who need like a cousin of mine came, who had died young, and died. He came to and told us how he died, what the people were that had done whatever they had done to him, and he also told us how we can free him because he was still earthbound, if you like. The people that had done the negative to him had done stuff where he would work for them on the other side, like do spiritual work or work that would elevate them. And so he was just floating around, still on the surface, if you like, beneath the surface. And so he told us what to do and what kind of things we could do to help release him. And between my mom, myself, and some of like his sister, who is not here, but we did it remotely. She's in Canada, and a cousin. We did a like a joint thing to free him. Things like that happen.
We're coming to the end of this conversation. Is there a message, something you'd arises in your heart to say to me and this audience that you think would be good for us to hear?
Yeah. I think it's important to not be too concerned by what other people think and how other people perceive whatever it is that you do. It's important to stand alone if you need to. Because actually, if you feel connected to the stars and the moon, to the rivers, the trees, there's always a strength, there's always a potential to heal and rise above any of the circumstances that you find yourself in. And it's just honoring those connections, knowing what the river really means, knowing about your connection with any of the cosmic elements. The rainbow, for example, I have a real affinity with since that time. And so when someone passes away, I say to them, their spirits, okay, show me your rainbow and I will look out for your rainbow. And you must show me your rainbow. And most recently, we actually lost a really dear brother of ours. He passed away. He was a beautiful man. And I was looking for his rainbow. I've been looking for his rainbow since he passed, and I saw it on Saturday. And it happens all the time without fail. So those are things that give me comfort, and those are things that, even though I sometimes feel alone and feel isolated, I know that I am really not, because my greater family are those the planets, the stars, the river, everything. So that's what I want to say to the listeners and to yourself.
That is a very beautiful note for us to end on.
Thank you.